This episode of Commentary, Trek Stars, is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 10 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. This is Part 5 in our series on Ira Stephen Bear as a showrunner, where we will be looking at Bear's sixth show, Alphas. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today we're joined by Brandon of our other show, Commentary, Trek Stars Off Topic. How's it going, Brandon?
It's good. Yourself?
I'm doing okay.
Excellent.
Thanks for joining us. Now, we've had you on the show before. You've seen Alphas, but another reason why we brought you on is because you're a pretty big comic book fan, I would say. Certainly, whenever I have questions about comic book mythology or whatnot, I come to you for the answers. For whatever reason. But
I guess the internet's not close by.
Nah, usually it's easier just to go to you. So that, I think, will come into play in today's discussion.
Sure, that makes sense.
Okay, so 2009, Ira Stephen Bear does season 2 of Crash, and after that, due to various reasons, I'm assuming...
It not being a good show, probably.
That might have something to do with it. The show is canceled.
What?
Yeah, no, I mean, there were some lurking variables. For example, Dennis Hopper passed away, so him being the sort of... maybe not lead actor, but, you know, marquee name that might have had some impact on the decision to not continue, but I'm not sure if it would have continued even with him. Mm-hmm. But before he did Crash, before the writer's strike, Ira Stephen Bear began work on a novel, and if I can have the timeline correct, he picked up... the novel again once Crash was over. Now, a lot of this info is coming from our friend Larry Nemechek's video interviews that he did with Ira Stephen Bear just prior to the release of Alphas. You can find those on YouTube. Just type in Ira Stephen Bear Alphas and they'll come up. It's like a 4-part series. It's really, really good. So I highly recommend that. But in that interview, he says that he decided to write the book before committing to another series. So there's a year there, 2010, where there is no Ira Stephen Bear on television. But in 2011, he got the gig as the showrunner for Alphas. Now, Alphas has a weird history itself. It was created by Zach Penn and Michael Carnow, who are... two guys. Carnow, he's done a few things here and there, like he wrote for Real Monsters and some other things. A bunch of stuff, actually. Zach Penn is someone whose work you might be a little more familiar with. He did things, whether he wrote the actual screenplays or stories or something for a bunch of these things. Last Action Hero, X2, Elektra, X-Men Last Stand, Incredible Hulk, Avengers. So Alphas was originally sold to ABC a couple years before it actually made it onto the air. And then ABC got worried about the science fiction elements of the show and decided to not go ahead with it. And that original pilot was written by Penn and Carnow and directed by Jack Bender, who... has done a lot of stuff with J.J. Abrams, actually. He was, I think, lead director on Alias, and I think also Lost, if I'm not mistaken. He's been around. He's a solid director. And also, my current prediction for the director of Star Trek 13. I'm just putting that out there. So, Alphas is picked up by ABC, then thrown out by ABC, And then after a couple of years in sort of limbo, which is funny, seeing as how David Strathairn is in it, it gets picked up by the Sci-Fi Channel. So, Max, would you like to give us the premise for Alphas?
You know X-Men?
Mm-hmm.
That,
but without, costumes, without the superhero version of it. It's more like a real-world X-Men.
You're giving it a lot of credit. They do a whole bunch of stuff that's right out of X-Men comics.
To be fair, so is Heroes.
It is.
But at least Alphas was a better version of the X-Men than Heroes was.
Oh, yes. It is much, much better than Heroes.
But it's also not a... Whereas Heroes, I mean, right in the title, it's like, oh, these are going to be superheroes. This is more of a
But even Heroes, despite being like rooted in the exact same like memes, also didn't have costumes, and it's not because.
But I think he's saying that they are trying to be superheroes.
Yeah, you have like vigilantes.
The character hero was trying to be a hero. Actual superhero, and then the main, the kind of rogue character was trying to evolve to a quote-unquote superhero, or a hero at least. Whereas the characters, they're almost more like psychiatric patients that occasionally help the FBI out, at least at the beginning of
season. The edging around the issue that it's like the X-Men doesn't really get us anywhere.
No.
Because it's definitely an X-Men ripoff.
I'm not denying that. I'm just there are differences. That's
what I'm saying. And but like they also have a super team that has a single older guy leader. If he was in a wheelchair, it would be impossible to talk about this show without talking about
that. And the fact he isn't a alpha.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we can sort of break down the premise a little bit here. Like basically, this is a world in which there are essentially mutants. And, you know, they say that they've been around for a while, but now they're starting to become more prevalent. And it is like our world, just with people who have extraordinary abilities in some way or another, and each of them are different. One of them has super strength, one of them has super reflexes or what have you. One can smell things and see.
So the original premise, which they kind of lost, was that, like, the abilities weren't supposed to be so far-fetched as they were... quote-unquote unbelievable.
No one controls the weather. Yeah, nothing physically impossible. Stuff that you could imagine a person could do.
So, like, the guy that was super strong, he wasn't, like, crazy strong. He's just strong for, like, imagine if you were...
He could move a car.
Right.
He had a physically possible muscle density.
But it's more endorphin-based or...
But you can't move a car with endorphins. Like
is supposed to be obviously none of the stuff makes sense really in the real world.
Well, I mean you have to imagine that there's a little bit more going on than just like the two word answer given, because like the show has to be plausible and also have people with superpowers. So if you have to do a little, you know, extra work to make it plausible. Well, it seems fine to me.
Yeah. But, yeah, the show is the X-Men, essentially. The main character is not Professor X in that he has no powers, but he's the kind of psychiatrist character, which kind of is a parallel to Xavier.
He's basically, and like Xavier, he's sort of like the world's leading authority on alphas. And he's, a psychiatrist who's trying to help these people out. He's trying to create an environment for them. So he puts together a team, which is supposed to be partially like a therapy session, kind of like a group therapy session. But it's a team of alphas who assist the FBI in various investigations, because they each have unique talents, which can, you know, hopefully, by his thinking anyway, help out. In solving some crimes, usually crimes related to other alphas, you know?
I don't know if that's totally true. I mean, I think, definitely as the show goes on, that's kind of the focus, other alphas. But I'm not sure that they just help with purely alpha cases.
Perhaps not. I mean, I think that's usually, though. What is, I mean, usually have the alpha of the week, right?
No. No? There were a lot of alphas of the week.
I think, I mean, just going off of what happens before, or I'm not sure. Like, basically, like, the first episode kind of draws them back towards I forget the Brotherhood of Mutants equivalent. But before that, it seems like that
that organization. Is it called, like, Red Flag or something?
Yeah, Red Flag.
Yeah.
It feels like they were kind of off the radar for a while. And then, like, that by the new character, quote-unquote new character, the kind of character who can, I forget how they describe his power. He can pretty much do, he has, like, a one-to-one mind-to-body ratio. So he can do crazy things.
He can put a quarter into a vending machine from two blocks away.
Right.
Hypokinesis, I think is what they call it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what leads them back to the path of the Red Flag. So, I mean, there are, I mean, like, obviously, like, you have the super strong character who's kind of a parallel to Beast. You have the kind of, she's not really a telepath per se, but the kind of,
She's a mind controller.
Is that what they call it? That was more of a pusher or something.
But yeah, anyway, pusher, yeah. But, I mean, what she does is she basically gets you to do...
She's that guy from the X-Files.
What you want her to do.
Yeah.
Pusher.
Yeah. Of course, the other characters don't quite work as parallels to
the X-Men guy that characters. Played
There's the kind
Nigel
of
Nigel Murray on Bones, who has computer superpowers.
Yeah, he's like
he can smell microwaves.
The one thing with his powers, I could get maybe seeing radio frequencies, but I can't buy like having control over those frequencies. And then, of course, there's the chick you mentioned who can kind of shut off one sense.
Yeah,
and but like have it magnified like by 10 or whatever.
Yeah, she can amplify any of her senses,
which basically makes her like the walking crime lab, which allows them to go to crime scenes and you know,
get the clues. One dude's like, I can hear somebody's Wi-Fi password. What is the chemicals in this wound? I'll just email something to the doctor right now, and like they'll actually basically do that.
So the other conceit is that like. These people have a slight advantage, but there comes with that comes a drawback. So, example, the character that can kind of has crazy accuracy with guns, and it's all kind of based on his self confidence. So, if he feels great about himself, his powers work. But if he doesn't, it's kind of the opposite effect, where everything goes horribly wrong for him. And then, of course, the
like pusher. Anyone in the world.
Well, yeah. Well.
His weakness is the one that all humans have.
Then the pusher.
I'm vulnerable to bullets. And, you know, stuff that stabs me. I don't know. My main weakness.
And then the pusher, she's kind of addicted to her own power. Obviously, if you can make people do what you want them to do, it becomes easy to become kind of selfish. And then she has her whole, you know, past reasons for being the way she is.
And like in the X-Men, anyone who was once a villain occasionally becomes a villain for a brief interval.
Yeah, there's that temptation.
So, Brandon, what are your thoughts on the series, in season one in particular?
It has its problems, but I think that by the end of the first season, it kind of becomes interesting. I think it kind of figures out the best parts of what makes the X-Men comic work, as far as the kind of Magneto versus Xavier. Also, the kind of mutants versus humans. It's very clear that it's all kind of, again, coming from the X-Men, but distilled and handled pretty well. I like what they do with the second season. Naturally, by the time it gets canceled, it's kind of interesting to see what they would have done at the end. The first episodes are really rough. I'm a big X-Men fan, so I kind of stuck with it. But again, I think by the third episode, I think that's the one where their handler dies, like their FBI handler. I think by that episode, it kind of picked up steam. And then, again, by the end of the first season, it was in a good place.
What about you, Max? You a fan?
Sure. I watched it. When it started, I checked it out, as I would do to any like genre show. I'll watch the pilot and judge it as harshly as possible to possibly dissuade me from watching any more of it and being disappointed. But I wasn't disappointed. I was like, this is okay. It's not super dramatic or exciting, but they were clearly laying the groundwork very intelligently. And I thought that they could easily go to some very interesting places if they were just, you know, nurtured and given some time, allowed them to, you know, work out the kinks of their own little universe. It never quite got to like that level where you could say it was awesome. But you could definitely say that it was totally capable of going there. And they just needed to build up an infrastructure capable of supporting such a bizarre premise.
I feel like just comparing it to kind of the other sci-fi original shows, the Warehouse 51, I think.
And 13,
whatever.
Eureka.
Like, it didn't have, I think it was.
They all fit in the same universe, by the way, those three shows.
Yeah, they have the one character, the doctor chick.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Like, all of those shows have a very, like, tongue-in-cheek type feel.
Those two, but Alphys doesn't really.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's sort of weird.
Like I feel like I appreciate it that they at least didn't go that route. I don't like those shows, and that's part of the reason why. I just feel like the tone is off. Whereas with Alphys, I feel like the tone was right for what they were trying to do. Like, it was pretty, like, the concept behind it warranted the tone of the show.
It's kind of weird to imagine that, like, while Alphys is doing its thing, like, you have to presume that somewhere off in a different part of the country, in a different scene, somebody is, like, growing their hair because they put on Abe Lincoln's hat.
Sure.
Like, that kind of crazy thing is apparently going on while Alphys is happening. Just sort of insane.
Did you see the show, Mike?
Yeah, I watched season one, and I enjoyed it. I liked the idea of having a more real-world approach to, you know, the mutant/superhero genre. You know, that's something which I would always think about, like, as a kid or whatever, reading comic books, is like, well, what if someone in the real world actually had these powers? How would it actually go down? And I'm not saying that Alphys is how it would go down, but I think it's a closer approximation than, you know, X-Men. I don't think they'd be putting on costumes and stuff like that. So from that side of it, you know, as someone who's a fan of the superhero genre, I liked seeing a show which dealt with that from this perspective. I thought that the characters were really good, and it was really well cast, you know, especially, I mean, you have David Strathairn in there. I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that, right? I mean, that right there adds a lot of credibility to your show as well. The leader guy.
Xavier.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was good. And I also did like the sort of procedural side of it. I think that was a good framework for individual episodes. So now, I didn't see season two because I was really just watching it for the Ira Steven Bear of it all, and he left in season two. I mean, it sounds like, you know, kind of putting the pieces together, it sounds like he was actually fired, because apparently there are interviews out there where he talks about how he, you know, enjoyed the show and how he had plans for season two, and he was, you know, excited to get back into it. And then that doesn't sound like someone who would want to leave. In season two, they brought in Bruce Miller, who ran Eureka prior to that. He also worked with Bear on 4400. To me, it just, like, all of that, especially you got Eureka, which I'm assuming was a more popular show and everything. You're bringing in someone from your bigger hit to take over and try to fix this one. I mean, just all those things, just, it sounds like, you know, it was a network decision to get rid of Bear and replace him.
Well, sure. Like, the show's never a huge show, like, viewership-wise.
Yeah. So when that happened, I was just kind of like, well, I'll get around to season two eventually. I do want to see season two, but I haven't watched it. Well, Max, what did you think about season two? And how did you see a difference in season one? Or
I watch shows in a really weird way. I sort of, you know, do everything according to my own schedule, and sometimes I'll develop like a backlog of episodes of a TV show that I haven't seen, and like, you know, every once in a while, it gets like a pretty big backlog. There was a period where I was like 7 episodes behind on Bones, and it was no big deal, just Bones. You know, But like on Alphas, it's a continuity driven show, and I ended up with a backlog of like 12 episodes in season 2. And I then was like, all right, I guess I'll watch these. And then, like, by the time I was done watching them, the show was canceled. And that was a weird thing because I didn't remember when season 1 ended. I didn't remember exactly how it ended. And I didn't remember why I was watching the show. And by the end of it, I didn't remember why I liked it. So it's not very good.
Season two. Okay.
It's not like a humongously terrible. It's just that the show never got a sense of what it was doing.
So
it kind of meandered.
The first season, the general population doesn't know about Alphas in general. So that at the end, the Doctor character reveals during a congressional meeting of some sort that there are these people that have these powers and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So the second season, A, deals with that. So they kind of go from being unknown to kind of being like Loch Ness Monster or like other kind of rumors or whatever.
They set up like an Arkham Asylum meets Guantanamo Bay facility.
Well, that's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
But they kind of deal with that, and it kind of ties in with the whole red flag thing. And then you have your Apocalypse / Magneto character who kind of took over the reins of the red flag organization and is kind of trying to kill all humans, which is the ultimate goal towards the end of the episode or the season.
Okay. So they did like expand on the mythology. Now, did you like where they went with it?
Yeah.
And so you liked season 2 then?
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. How do you think it compares to season 1?
Obviously, it builds off what they were going for, and I think it's a pretty decent step up as far as where those plot lines are going towards.
Yeah, it didn't betray the show in any way. I just think they didn't know what they were trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, again, they were following the kind of Magneto versus Xavier.
Well, I'll have to check out season 2 because it does sound like it's interesting. You know, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, I'm curious as to what Bear had planned for it and how it ended up differing from his original ideas. Brandon, any final thoughts on Alphas?
It's a good X-Men approximation. I feel that it definitely needed a little bigger budget, and probably not Sci-Fi Channel, but for a Sci-Fi Channel original show, I feel it was pretty decent. So yeah, good stuff.
What about you, Max?
Well, when the show began, I was already a viewer of most of Sci-Fi Channel's stuff, but when Alpha started, I was mainly impressed by how it didn't share that characteristic that we've talked about before, that old sort of stilted thing that Star Trek and 4400 had, that formal inflexibility. And Alphas had a style and a form of its own, and it was an evolving form. It was actually learning from the show what it should be. And so it seemed like it could actually theoretically be a much bigger hit than Sci-Fi had, but apparently Sci-Fi Channel's audience is an incredibly weird organization of very different, strange, weird people, because the people who watched Eureka and Warehouse 13 didn't want to watch Alphas because it was too,
well, again, it's
professional,
totally different tone. Like those, those are very like Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon esque shows. They're not quite as bad as Xena.
They're not bad. They're just a weird sort of like tone, like weird kind of like not. It's like some of it's tongue in cheek, but not really. It's more like a very lighthearted kind of tone. But there is definitely like a kind of awkwardness to it, It's almost like they are nerds. Those TV shows were nerds. And nerds like those TV shows because, like, of what they were. And Alphys was actually a pretty cool nerd. And people didn't seem to like it because it was just a little bit too tough looking. Like, yeah. It maybe knows how to throw a football. And the nerds were like, I don't want to hang out with this show.
Well, I enjoyed it. I am going to check out season two. But, you know, season one was the thing which really sort of appealed to me because of the bear thing. I wish it would have gone on further, like you guys were saying. I think if it had room to grow, it could have gotten better. But I did think it was a good show, and I was also kind of just one other thing. I was kind of struck by the similarities between this and 4400.
Superficially,
it was like a different execution of the same concept in a way, and I thought that was kind of cool to see. And ultimately, even though I think 4400 is a better show, I think that if Alphys had the time to grow like 4400 did, Alphys could have ended up being the superior show. I think the production value and everything was much better, the performances and all that stuff. So
I think
I
think the concept behind Alphys kind of doesn't. You can't do that kind of. That thing for too long, because essentially it's humans versus mutants and breaking down the mutants, good mutants versus bad mutants.
Yeah,
and there's only so long you can kind of go with that idea before it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah,
which I mean,
is what Alphys ran into.
It has no termination point built into the concept.
Yeah,
the problem you can't actually reach a satisfying conclusion because
it resolves itself.
That would be the end of all of it, and like the concept doesn't have in its structure a mechanism to do that, except for like maybe mass extinction, which would be an interesting way to end a series, and I might be into it, but I don't see
that would be the end. Though, that. You couldn't go beyond that.
Yeah, and you also can't really build to one of these days everyone's going to die. Yeah. Eventually. Maybe season 7.
Well, no matter what option you do, whether you have the humans win, the mutants win, or coexisting, it's not... They're all... there's a sense of finality to all three.
Yeah, but I mean, 4400 did actually pull the trigger on the mass extinction. And I think that's actually like a reasonable thing to do with your show about super people.
I mean, it's a similar show, but it's not the same.
No, it's not, but that's the thing. I mean, like they built into their structure like a finale concept. True. And Alphys did not really have that. Like there was no mechanism to actually end that story. It was basically just...
That comes from following the X-Men too closely.
Yeah, it's...
It works for an ongoing series.
You have to build into it some sort of device that makes it... clear that it's going in a direction, because it really did not seem to know where it was going, really, ever. It kind of never figured out what the show was really about in the big picture.
All right. Before we leave for today, there are two things that I do want to touch on that aren't related to Ira Steven Bear, but are related to Star Trek creators. The first is Marty Hornstein. He is a guy who was a producer / unit production manager in Star Trek. He worked on a number of the movies, Star Trek VI, and then First Contact, Insurrection, and Nemesis. And he's the type of guy who, you know, you won't really hear his name or hear people talk about him, generally speaking, or even, you know, on this show probably. But he was basically the guy who... figured out how to get the creator's vision up on the screen. His job was to say, okay, you want to have a thing where like 10 spaceships explode and then like a guy gets sucked out into space and then like you see whatever and his head blows up and, well, this is going to cost $52 million, but right now we've got $5. So how about we do it this way? So even though it does seem like sort of almost like an office job, like a money guy, he was a very creative component to the team, and from all accounts, he was very good at his job. He worked as a production manager or a producer or both on, you know, dozens of movies, you know, various movies and TV shows throughout the years, and he passed away a couple weeks ago, and I just thought that it should be noted because he was an integral part of the team for some of, at least, my favorite Star Trek stuff. I mean, Star Trek VI and First Contact were both excellent movies, and everyone seemed to love him, and he will be missed. Also, Ron Moore recently went onto Twitter and answered some fans' questions about various shows that he worked on, and some of them were really interesting answers. For example, when asked about DS9, you know, someone asked him, "Where is DS9 20 years on? Is Quark still tending bar?" And he answered, "Actually talking about that with Ira. Stay tuned." You know, that to me, I found to be really interesting. Like, what does that mean? You know, talking in what capacity? Are they going to release, like, a comic book? Or
they're writing fan fiction for
I mean, that could be. You know, it could be that they're going to do, like, a thing on the DVD or something like that, the Blu-ray. One other thing that someone asked him, which is kind of relevant to today's discussion, someone said, "How was Ira as a showrunner?" And he said, "The best I ever knew. I still learn from him every day." So there you go. Even Ron Moore loves Ira Stephen Bear, which I guess he kind of had to figure, especially since he got him to run his new show. But that's that.
It's still crazy. I can't figure out if the new relationship makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're doing it exactly right or they're doing it completely backwards.
Well, it's been fun talking about Ira Stephen Bear and Alphys today, but that's not the only thing we're talking about on Trek FM. Here's a taste of what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Janice Rand.
And Rand braces for impact against Kirk.
If I were on that bridge and I needed to brace for impact, I would totally grab Kirk.
I'd grab Rand.
You grab Rand? All right.
Yeah.
Well, different strokes for different folks, I guess.
Earl Grey.
Missing 24th century technology.
How about, like, a gun that shoots hypo sprays?
No, I assume you mean it shoots out the the chemical.
Like, ow! There's like a little mechanical thumb that dispenses it.
The Ready Room.
Affliction and Divergence.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about that, though, is to compare the Klingon ethics with the Section 31 ethics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there are some groups within the Klingons who maybe don't feel exactly the same way. But then there's this group within the humans who feels completely different. And you kind of wonder what the Klingons think maybe about someone who wouldn't do this.
The orb.
Implications of genetic enhancement.
And our scientific advancement is picking up pace all the time, our technological advancement. I think the urge for us to artificially enhance ourselves is going to be too great for us to ignore.
To the journey!
Resolutions rewrite.
Overall, this is a great story. It's about, like, love and loss and about moving on and not being able to move on, and has some baddies at the end, you know, and it's just, it's good.
Come on, this is why Harlequin paperbacks get sold.
Commentary, Trek stars.
Ira Stephen Bear, Crash.
I love Ira Stephen Bear. As much as anyone can love a television showrunner who they never met.
Oh, okay. All right, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you put that at the end there.
Warp 5.
Xenophobia and the Coalition of Planets.
Justification in his mind is that the Vulcans were observing us. Mm. They knew the war was happening. Mm. They didn't do anything to stop it. But, you know, it really wasn't the place of the Vulcans to step in and stop World War III.
Literary Treks.
James Swallow, The Poison Chalice.
Everybody in this story is dragged into a situation they don't want to be in. And that's kind of where the title, The Poison Chalice, originally came from, is the idea that, you know, Riker is given this promotion, which on paper sounds like a really great idea, but it's a poison chalice. You know, it turns out that it's not what he thought it was. And in fact, you know, he's being dragged into something that he doesn't want to be involved in.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. We have new shows for you every day, and you'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. Brandon, are you on Audible?
I've used it before.
Well, you can sign up. You can get like an Audible subscription, you know. And if you sign up using the offer code TrekFM, you can get a book for free.
I did not know this before, but now that I have this information, I will get on Audible.com.
Yeah, you should. Well, you know, if you go to Audible and you use the code, you can get a book for free, and you could get Star Trek Deep Space Nine Millennium Number One for free. It was written by Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens, who have written a ton of, you know, Star Trek books and have also written for Enterprise and stuff. It's narrated by Joe Morton. Everyone loves Joe Morton, right? So with this book, Millennium, it sounds pretty interesting. Here's the summary. Bajor is in flames. The corridors of Terak-Nor echo with the sounds of battle. It is the end of the Cardassian occupation and the beginning of the greatest epic adventure in the saga of Deep Space Nine. 6 years later, with the Federation losing ground in its war against the Dominion, the galaxy's greatest smugglers, including the beautiful and enigmatic Vash, rendezvous on Deep Space Nine. Their objective, a fabled lost orb of the prophets unlike any other, rumored to be the key to unlocking a second wormhole in Bajoran space, a second celestial temple. Pretty cool, huh?
Vash Returns.
Vash Returns, an Iris Stephen Bear creation. So there you go.
Yeah.
You can get that on Audible. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank you and Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and Trek.fm. All right. Well, Brandon, anywhere people can find you on the internet?
On the internet.
But don't do that.
Well, people could find you at commentarytrackstars.com. Where?
Yes, you could totally find me there.
Where we
do that?
Where we
if do? You want to find me?
We do Commentary Track Stars off topic every week with you.
Yes.
We can email.
You can email Mike.
All of us. All of us at comtrackstars@gmail.com.
Yes. You can read his blog at brandon.com.
Yes.
Or you can find us on Twitter at comtrackstars.
Yes, you can. Yes, all of those things are true.
Yes, they are. So that's it for Alphas. And we will be back next week to recap Ira Stephen Bear's career as a showrunner.